Welcome to the Woodridge Baptist Church Podcast. For more information about what's happening in the life of our church, visit our website at www.woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast.
See, in this passage today, as we look in James chapter 4, James talking to a group of people that identified with Christ. They were Christians, but they had lost their way. James, in the course of about 105 verses, not that he wrote verses, but in a course of what turns out to be 105 verses, gives 54 commands to this church. In other words, he was trying to rein them back in with a lot of direction, more or less talking to a group and saying, you've lost your way. You've lost your way. And as he gets into chapter 4, verses 13 through 17, I think this passage is particularly relevant to Kingwood. And let me tell you why I say that. I have an opportunity throughout the course of the week and just in time, I go out and I visit with a lot of people, many of whom don't go to our church. Some of them would describe themselves as atheists and agnostics. And in fact, some of the best friends that I've made in this community are people that are atheists and agnostics. I enjoy meeting with them. They've invited me to be a part of their group as we discuss things ranging from morality to politics to the existence of God. It really is one of the things that I love the most. But the people that I have run into most in Kingwood don't describe themselves as atheists and agnostics. Most of the people in Kingwood don't care. Most of the people in Kingwood are not giving any kind of thought as to whether or not God exists and why that matters. What's interesting in my conversations is people mostly in Kingwood say that, you know, their life is overall fine. They're satisfied with what it is. And so they don't really feel a need. And so they just go on with life. They, in other words, would fall in line with a lot of what the rest of our country looks like when we talk about the nuns. Some of you are thinking Catholicism right now, but don't. Because nuns is N-O-N-E-S. These are people that have no affiliation whatsoever to any belief at all. And they are happy for you to have the belief that you've got. If that's what gives your life meaning and purpose, then good for you. You know, run with it. For me, I'm going to go on the boat. Our community is about 75% unchurched. And in a meeting that I had with the Union Baptist Association, which is one of the largest associations in the country, it's one of the earliest associations in the country as well, they would confirm that, but adding a little bit of a point of emphasis here, namely this: Kingwood is the second most unreached area of the greater Houston area. We're living here. Why? Well, if my conversations are any indication, it's because their life is good. And again, they don't feel like they have any need. And usually what people mean by that is financially we're fine. Finances is what it's about. Finances opens up our opportunities. And so why? I mean, what's the point? This passage is going to speak to that. Dr. Leslie Weatherhead, as I was thinking of that name, you know, Dr. Leslie Weatherhead, he took a study of life. And he tried to portray life in terms of seasons, taking your life on what would be an average, a 24-hour day. Are you with me so far? If you take your life, like your years, and he says, let's encapsulate a life in terms of a 24-hour day. And then what he wanted to do was to say, where are you at in that 24-hour period in your life? In other words, if you look up here, I've provided it. On the left, you see an age, and on the right, you'll see a time. So for example, if you're 15 years old, you're at roughly 10:25 in the morning in your life on a 24-hour day. However, if you're 20, you're already at 11:34 a.m. A 25-year-old, you're already in the afternoon. Hopefully you've had a snack. How about 30? You're at 1:51 p.m. in a 24-hour day. If you're 45, well, you know, the sun's starting to set a little bit. We're looking at 5:15 p.m. That one hits home because that's me. That's me. 55, you're at 7:24. If you're 65, you're at 9:51 p.m. And if you're at 70, you're at 11 p.m. And that's kind of where I left off, right? He's actually got more, but there you go. In a 24-hour, if you take life and say, we're going to encapsulate this in a 24-hour frame of reference, the question that I would have for you this morning is, where are you at roughly on the clock? And the reason that this matters is because this is what James is actually speaking to. Because as he says in verse 13 of chapter 4, here's the way it reads. He says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll travel to such and such a city, spend a year there and do business, and we'll make a profit. Now stop for a second. Did you notice how he started this? He says, come now. Now, this is basically a turn of a phrase, much like what my father would used to say to me when I would be speaking to him, and he would look at me and be like, come on, come on. Have you ever had that moment where you're saying something, but what you're saying doesn't really match on to reality? Well, that's what James is trying to say. Come on, people. Because who are we really? Who are you? When you say, today or tomorrow, we'll travel to such and such a city, we'll spend a year there, and we'll do business and make a profit. See, the key to this verse are the words, we will. Those are the keys to this verse. This is what we are going to do. This is what is going to happen. Notice how specific he gets. The plan includes the time, today or tomorrow. It includes a location. We're going to be going to this city. It includes a duration. We're going to be there about a year. It includes a couple of purposes. We're going to set up a business, and we're going to make a profit. It's important that we remember this. An important difference to remember is that we're not God. And James is trying to bring this to the attention of this group of people. You're assuming a role for yourself that isn't your role to play. You're not God. Think of how COVID impacted people's plans, and then see why God isn't impacted like COVID, like we are. And I think all of us can agree, it's been an enormous global impact. In the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences to explore the impact of the coronavirus disease, going back into 2019 and whatnot, on small businesses, they conducted a survey of more than 5,800 small businesses between March 28th and April 4th of 2020. There were several themes that emerged from their study. This was the first. Mass layoffs and closures had already occurred. Remember, this is over a year ago. Mass layoffs had already occurred just a few weeks into the crisis. Second, the risk of closure was negatively associated with the expected length of the crisis. Also, businesses had widely varying beliefs about the duration of the pandemic. Third, a number of small businesses were already financially fragile. The median business with more than $10,000 in monthly expenses had only about 2 weeks of cash on hand at the time that they did the survey. In other words, they didn't have much, and they didn't see that this was going to go well for their business. And so fourth, what you saw was they started to scramble on how they could keep the doors open. The majority of small businesses planned to seek funding through the CARES Act. Now, the reason that I give this example, because it's only one example, is that all of them would say, we didn't see this coming. We were doing what we do, and then bang, it hit, and then scramble. Now, God is not affected by the coronavirus like we are, but the effect of this way of thinking is that it leads to presumption. What James is talking about, I'm going to go to this city. I'm going to set up a business. I'm going to make a profit. This is what I'm going to do. It leads to a lot of presumption. And when you think of presumption, this is when we plan our lives in a way that does not involve God in the planning. You've just got other things that you're up to. Now, I want to be clear. God is not against planning. There's nothing wrong with that. Scripture speaks to the fact that you should have a plan for your days. In Proverbs 21:5, it says, the plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty will come to poverty. If you're not intentional with the way that you work, if you're not intentional with the way you handle your money, you can go to a place of ruin. So planning is actually good. Planning means you can, for example, look at what you make and say, how do we live within the means of what we have? That's good. That's God-honoring. Nothing wrong with that kind of plan. But some of us need to be more diligent in making actual plans for our life and following through with the plans that we make. Scripture is for it. Even gives an example in Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 8. Solomon says, some humans can take a pretty good lesson from the ant, which, by the way, ants are lesser than us, but we can still learn from them. He says, go to the ant, sluggard. Go to the ant. Consider its ways and be wise. It doesn't have a commander. It doesn't have an overseer or a ruler. Yet it stores its provisions in summer, and it gathers its food at harvest. ants know to do this, maybe we should know to do this as well. Again, nothing wrong with planning. Some of us, in fact, waste way too much of our time, and we waste way too much of our resources. Andy Stanley is a pastor out in Georgia, and he was giving a talk one time, and in the talk, somebody was saying, you know, Andy, my gosh, you pastor this large church, you've written all of these books. I mean, man, how do you get all of this done? And he says, well, I'm doing those things when you're sitting at home watching TV, or you're on social media, or you're gaming. I'm just using my time very differently than you are. He didn't mean it in a bad way. He meant it as like a good push for people on how it is that you use your time. What's being spoken of here for James is that he's speaking against making plans as though God has nothing to do with the plans that you make. So maybe some of us need to stop for a moment, one verse deep into this, and say, how deep into my plans do I factor God with my life? And I can't answer that for you. That's something that you need to answer for yourself. Let me give an example of presumption. One example from his time. It's time. If you think about it, everything that's been given in this is, it assumes that you're going to make it through today. It also assumes that you're going to wake up tomorrow. But neither of those things are a given, are they? Neither of those things are. So James offers some thoughts. And you see it starting in verse 14. He says, you don't know what tomorrow will bring or what your life will be. For you're like a vapor that appears for a little while and then you vanish. In other words, they were planning without the knowledge of God, the effect of which is that they were deceiving themselves. You were thought that you were going to get a promotion, so you made your plans based on that. In fact, you went out and bought that house because you knew that you were going to get that promotion, and then you didn't get the promotion. That's an example of what James is talking about. Now, in 1 Corinthians 1:25, Paul gives us this, especially when he says, we want to compare our wisdom to the wisdom of God. And at the end of the day, friends, we're not stacking up. Paul says it like this, for the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than our strength. Or even in Psalm 73:22, you have the Psalm of Moses where he says, I was senseless and ignorant like a beast before you. When he's talking with God, he says, I'm going to give a comparison of who I am to who it is that I'm talking to. I'm like a beast. Now, we have a dog in our house. His name is Duke. We also call him the beast. We also call him the dark lord. But I can tell you this, I have never once in my life gone home and stepped out back with Duke, say, hey, come out with me. We sit outside and say, let me tell you what's going on and could you give me some advice here? I have never actually done that with him. But when we think about who it is that we're talking to in terms of our standing with God, what does our wisdom actually look like? We look like a beast. So there's not going to be this moment in our life, and this is what James is trying to hand off. We don't have any wisdom to offer to God. We don't see things clearly like God does. Our motives aren't pure like his motives are pure. But we still want to tell him the way things ought to be. There's just a better way. To be honest with you, my guess is a number of people in the emergency room right now didn't plan on being there. And I think that's a fair assumption. Who are you? Who are you? You're a mist that appears for a little while and you vanish away. On 9/11, on September 11th, I'm guessing the people that died in the trade towers didn't wake up that morning and say, this is my last day to live. I'm guessing that. And if the law of averages plays out, at least numerically, I'm more done with my life than I have life left to go. Dr. Weatherhead already took care of that for us, right? I'm more done than not at this point. He says, you're a mist. We need to wake up in the morning and just remember that life really is, it's special. And we need to remember it's fragile. And remember who he's writing to. Because in the Middle East, mist doesn't last very long. It's a puff, and it's gone. We really do have a small opportunity on this side of eternity to make something special out of whatever number of days that we've got. The question is how are we spending our days? So he says, I want to give you a piece of advice, and you see it in verse 15. He says, instead, here's what you should say. Here's what you're saying, right? But here's what you should say. If the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. And that will vary. He doesn't get specific, because what the Lord wants to do with me could be very different with what the Lord wants to do with you. We're different. If the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. So he says, here was the progression. We were presumptuous about our days. We were presumptuous about the control over the days, which led us to deceiving ourselves like we have control over our life, which led to a transgression, which was we didn't have God in any place in our life. Instead, what did he say? Daily you wake up and you say, if God wills this for me today, and mean it, if God wills it. Those in business should trust their enterprise to the Lord. Great that you have business. And God willing, it would be a prosperous one. Nothing wrong with that at all. But those in business should trust their enterprise to the Lord. Since every good and perfect gift comes from God, which is what James says in the first chapter, every good thing that you've got comes from him. So then does every good outcome of our human purposes when we're tapped into him. Here's another way of saying it. These are my plans, but I'm open to changing them if that's what you will. These are my plans. It's okay to be honest. Tony Evans gave an example like this. He says, you know, the more you know, God knows more than we do. He desires better things than we do. And when we actually pray that we would know and put into practice the will of God for our life, there could be blessings that God wants to give you that you wouldn't receive, or pain that God is trying to save you from because you're already fixed on what you want to do, except when you listen and follow. Tim Keller put it this way, God will only give you what you would have asked for if you knew everything he knows. And that's a good thought. In the Psalms, in Psalm 18:30, it reminds us of this. God's way is perfect. All of the Lord's promises prove true. He is a shield for all who look to him for protection. And that's the part of our experience that we can absolutely take to the bank. Tomorrow is not a given. Today is actually not a given. But God is a given. He is. But then he looks at this group. He says, that's a better way. But in verse 16, here's what he says. But as you are, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. It's a sin to know the good and not to do it. Bragging. Have you ever known a braggart? Everybody, look to your left, I'm kidding, don't do that. Look to your left, look to your right, look inside. Have you ever known a braggart? When you think about bragging means to believe that you are the sole cause of your own well-being. I am here because of all of the things that I've done. But when you think about what bragging and arrogance leads to, bragging will lead to prayerlessness, it will lead to pridefulness, and it will lead to entitlement. There's no reason to talk to God because I'm the source of my well-being. Which leads to pride because you continue to believe that, well, everything really is about you. And then it leads to a place where you don't see all of your stuff as a good gift from God, like James talks about in chapter 1. Instead, you're entitled to it. After all, I put my hands to the work of it. I'm owed this. Know anybody like that? Leads to prayerlessness, pridefulness, and entitlement. Now, one way that we know that we're not tapped in to what possibilities God has for us is our reaction when he intrudes in our plans. And probably all of you know what that's like. When you had your plans, and then something in life happens, and everything changes. There was an intrusion. Our reaction to that intrusion can be a good indicator of how we were really relating to God anyway. We can also tell the kind of relationship we have with God through our response to his direction. Let me give you an example. This isn't what I want, and I'm angry that you're not going to give me what I want, because, I mean, after all, what kind of God are you if you're not going to give me what's easy for you to give? which, by the way, with God, with omniscience, knows everything, it's all powerful, not hard to give a lot of stuff. That's entitlement. In other words, or as an example that I heard years ago, what many people want is not a relationship with God. They want a 911 relationship with God. God, I want you nearby in the case of an emergency. I'll call you. You don't call me. And that's who these people were. They weren't sinning just because of the wrong things they were doing, though there was plenty of that. They were also sinning because they were failing to do what they knew to be right, just passing over it, because they were busy with other things. Instead, we need to remember Psalm 90 and the advice there. Teach us to number our days that we can apply them to wisdom. And that's just a better way to go. Have you ever bought something, regretted it, and couldn't return it? Have you ever done that before? Nowadays, returning it's become kind of easy, but you know what I'm saying. You bought something, you were like, I shouldn't have bought that, and you couldn't return it. Did you know that the way you spend your time is exactly like that? You're buying something with the decisions that you make, and once your time is spent, it's done. It's not the kind of thing that you get back. Time is a lot like that. Maybe you haven't numbered your days well. Friends, you can start numbering your days today. You can start numbering your days today. If you remember in the Passion of Jesus, in a time where he was struggling incredibly, and I always have this moment, just thinking about Jesus in Gethsemane, the suffering, the mental suffering that he was going through, the physical suffering that was going to be ahead of him. And what did he say? He says, not my will, but your will be done. That we would pray like that. That we would be committed like that. Jesus was numbering his time when he made that commitment. He didn't like what he was about to do, but he was confident in the planning capacity of his Father. He wasn't second-guessing that. He just knew that the road was going to be a difficult one. Maybe you're in the same place. You're not wondering about the planning capacity of the Father for your life. You just see that it's going to be a challenging road. Let me give you some thoughts this morning on numbering your days well. A couple of things to remember. And here's the first. Our being busy doesn't mean that we're being fruitful. Our being busy doesn't mean that we're being fruitful. For some of us, our days are incredibly packed. In fact, we just had the marriage getaway. It was really a lot of fun to be with you all that were there. And we asked a number of questions of the couples. The theme was get in the game. So it was kind of a football theme. There you go, guys. We were thinking about you. And there was this one question. And well, there were five questions that we asked right off the bat. Here was one of the questions. One of the questions was, how would you describe your marriage and your family? And then, of course, you have the name of a team, right? For example, the Saints. Our marriage is heavenly, right? That was one possibility. Wendy and I gave a different answer. Wendy and I said that ours is a lot like the Jets, and it's because it is absolutely chaotic and hard to control. How many of you would probably say, I can relate to that? We're the Jets. I'm numbering your day as well. Maybe you can look at a day and the way that you spent your time and say it was incredibly busy, but it wasn't worth what I put into it. Busy is one thing. Fruitful is another thing. Second, on numbering your days, we need wisdom. And one of the things that we see in James is ask God for it. Ask God for wisdom. How do I live my days well? Ask him. God's not going to withhold this from you. You knew this from James 1:5. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God who gives abundantly. He doesn't want to hold this back from you. Did you notice that in Psalm 90, Moses said, teach us to number our days. Not, I already know how to number our days. It's show me. Show me. I don't even know what to do a lot of days when I wake up. Show me how to spend this day well. We spend our time and resources, by the way, on the things that we value. So where are you spending your time and your resources? And are the things that you're valuing the things that God actually values? It's a question that we need to answer. So how do we number our days well? A couple of things to keep in mind this morning. And here's the first. Set your priorities. Set your priorities. Determine what is important versus what is important to you. And there is a difference. Determine what is really important versus what is just important to you. For example, in marriage, one of the things that Wendy and I try to stay committed to is marriage time. And what that means is sometimes it's as little as 30 minutes, but we've said this to the girls. All right, y'all go to bed, but it's this time. Great, bye. You know why? We've already given them a lot of time. We already have. But at the end of the day, we're raising them up to send them off. We're always the parents, but we're raising them up to send them out. Avery's not that far from gone. Oh, man, shouldn't I have said that? I shouldn't have said that. Avery's not far from gone. Wendy's not going anywhere, I think. She isn't going anywhere. And when Lila, the last one, goes out the door, and she's off to college and career and all of that, you know who's sticking around? Me and Wendy. We're together. What I don't want is, at that moment, I look at her and go, who in the world are you? Because the house is going to be quiet. And maybe all those years we've so poured into the kids that we look at each other, we don't even know who each other is. We have set a priority, and the priority is this: I'm not losing you in the busyness. I'm still going to know who you are in the busyness, which means we put a boundary down. Bang, time's up. Y'all get out, go to your rooms, read, whatever it is that you do. We're hanging out. We set our priorities. What's true of your marriage also needs to be true of your relationship with God. We need marriage time. We all need God time. We all need it. As you open the Bible, something that you need to keep in mind, you are hearing the thoughts and the intentions and the desires of God. If you open the Bible, you cannot say that God is silent and not talking to you. He is. You hear his thoughts, intentions, desires, and heart. You hear it. And then we have this moment where we say, I can compare mine with his. How am I stacking up? We all need God time. Portion it, just like you would for your marriage. Matthew says it like this in Matthew 6:33. He says, Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Everything else will be added to you. Or even in Colossians 3:2, Paul gives this word of advice. If you are risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sits at the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on the things of the earth. Set your affection. You see it? Your affections, your heart. Set it on those things. And some of the ways that we do it are the things that we do already know. He's already revealed. It's not a mystery. In 1 Timothy 5:8, honor your family. That might include the work that you do, the provisions that you make for your husband, your wife, your children. That's a good thing. Caring for those in need. We saw that in James 1:27. We should. God cares about it. We should care about it. Maintaining your physical life, the body that you gave, that God gave you. I know you hear me make a joke where I'm like, I don't eat sugar. You know, my body's a temple. Well, really, my body is a temple. It is, but so is yours. How well do you maintain your physical life? That is a good use of time. When the prophet Elijah was dealing with the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel, this huge victory over the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel, shortly after that, this guy is running from Jezebel. He's at his wit's end. And how was he taken care of? You need to get some sleep, and you need to eat more than once. You need to stop. Maybe some of you are spiritually out of sync because physically you have a pattern of life with your body that your body wasn't meant to have. You're literally beating yourself absolutely to death, and then it takes a toll on your emotions and your soul. We see this even with Elijah. Go to bed. Get some food. And then he wakes up and he's like, what's going on here? He's like, here's some more food. Go back to bed. All right, now wake up. Let's go. Right? He needed it. How about you? So friends, can I encourage you this morning, in the godliest sense of what we're talking about, in the sense of Proverbs, the wise planning, can I encourage you to evaluate how you use your time? Like literally go home and think about it, because it is precious. When I was a kid, and I've shared this with you before, there were no fewer than 5 times that I was convinced I was not going to make it through the night. I'm sitting in critical care in hospitals. I was like, this is it. And I'm in it. I couldn't breathe. If you had told me when I was 10 years old that I would still be kicking at 45, I don't think I would have believed you. As a matter of fact, I know I wouldn't have believed you, because I was a suffering kid. And it showed me something about numbering my days. 45 seemed ancient. That would be like 35 more years. That's crazy. I mean, the whole thought never would have crossed my mind, because I'm sitting there in a hospital going, man, if I get tomorrow, that's a gift. That's a gift. Intentionality is a good thing. Purposeful living is a good thing. Can I encourage you, when you wake up, recognize that that was a gift? It wasn't owed. We're not entitled to it. It was a gift. And just say right off the bat, what can I do to give this day back to you, whether it's in your business or your home? Can I also encourage you to look for inefficiency? Can I encourage you to look at the waste in your life? Friends, there's nothing wrong with watching a show. There's not. There's nothing wrong with social media, necessarily. There's nothing wrong with gaming, necessarily. But when you're hitting your seventh hour, maybe there's some inefficiency in your life. Is that fair? Is that fair? You know, this new show came out. I'm finished with the whole season in one day. Was there a different way? You know, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. Y'all chew on it when you get home. All right. Look for some inefficiency in the way that you make your decisions. And then make some cuts in how you use your time and your resources. Make some cuts. And make it a daily thing. Here's a question. This is a question that I ask myself every day. I'm just going to let you into my life a little bit. You know, Wendy's asleep. Girls are down. I'm usually the last one asleep. I'm usually the first one awake. This is what I say, and I ask myself at the end of every day. Was I faithful? That's it. Was I faithful? And if the answer to that question is yes, let's go to bed. If the answer to that question was no, then if God gives me tomorrow, what changes do I make so that I can say yes tomorrow night? I think Jesus deserves that. Don't you? I think Jesus deserves that. He's been so good to me. But also, just because I say, this life is a gift. It's a present. And I'm going to get to open a day, possibly tomorrow, if he wakes me up. Final thought for you this morning, something that I got from Tim Keller, something that I wanted to share with you. The reason that all of this is really near to us is because for those of us that gave our life to Jesus, what we know is that it was already his life to have anyway. You know, that what the decisions that we had made are what pulled us away from him. And I just think about that every day. And I'm sitting here pastoring a church, and I go, man, talk about an undeserving guy. But isn't that the story of Jesus, is that everything that we have really was undeserved? I wasn't entitled to any of this. I wasn't. But when I think about what the message of Jesus is, I think Tim Keller said it really well, and I wanted to share it with you. He said, we must say to ourselves something like this. Well, when Jesus looked down from the cross, he didn't think, I'm giving myself to you because you're so attractive to me. No, he was in agony. And he looked down at us, denying him, abandoning him, and betraying him. And in the greatest act of love in history, he stayed. He stayed. He said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. He loved us, not because we were lovely to him, but to make us lovely. The Christian gospel is that I am so flawed that Jesus had to die for me. And yet I'm so loved and valued that Jesus was glad to die for me. This leads to deep humility and deep confidence all at the same time. It undermines both swaggering and sniveling. I can't feel superior to anyone. And yet I have nothing to prove to anyone. I don't think more of myself nor less of myself. Instead, I think of myself less, because we are more sinful and flawed in ourselves than we ever dared believe. Yet at the very same time, we are more loved and accepted in Jesus Christ than we had ever dared hope. And that is for all of us. This morning, here's what the question isn't. The question isn't, have we made choices that have fractured our relationship with Jesus? We have. The question for us this morning is, am I going to recognize the decisions that I've made that have fractured my relationship with Jesus, but then take him at his word that his grace is sufficient to cover my sin? That's it.
We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. For more information about our church, visit www.woodridge.org.